This is Ross Owen.
Virus database has been updated.
This is Ross Owen. They really know their shite.
Why, this is bigger than the Whispering Steeple in Kansas City.
This is Ross Owen.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
7 years of college down the drain.
This is Ross Owen.
Great Scott! What the devil are they doing?
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Woodedge, D-Day Historian, a battlefield tour guide in Normandy, France. I offer tours of the D-Day landing beaches of 1944, along with my partner Magali. If you would like to find out more, see my website at ddayhistorian.com and my partner Magali's at ddayforyou.com.
Hey, this is Donnie Wahlberg, and you're listening to Ross Owen's Interviews.
Black Sky Radio.
Hey, 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 how's it going, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to the very first edition of the Ross Owen Show of 2017 right here on Black Sky Radio. We've got a great show lined up today. My special guest is Rick Gomez, who played George Luz in Band of Brothers, and he's going to be talking about his new movie, The Week, which is a fantastic new comedy. We're going to be speaking to Rick in the next 10 minutes right here on the show. So stay tuned, don't go away, it's going to be a great show.
One, two, three, four.
There we go, that's Trouble in the Wind, a great track called Rising. And that's from the soundtrack of The Week, a new movie written by and starring Rick Gomez. Now, you all know that Rick played George Luz in Band of Brothers and is joining me now on the phone. Rick, thank you for being my first guest of 2017. Welcome to the show.
Oh, Mr. Owen. I can't tell you how tickled I am to be the first one out of the gate.
Now, last month you were part of the Band of Brothers cast reunion in Bastogne, which was organised by Tim Gray of the World War II Foundation. What was it like being reunited with your Band of Brothers buddies over there?
Oh my gosh. It's unbelievable. Anytime we get together, it feels like no time has gone by. This one was really special. It was around the holidays. It was such a warm reception. Everybody was so kind. Man, you were there. How much fun was that?
It was incredible. And I mean, there was a lot of good stuff as well. Nick Aaron getting up on the stage and singing. And
oh my gosh, man. And then me and Ross got a chance to get up there. And then you got a chance to get there. And then there were magic tricks. And I think there may have been a little bit of booze. I'm not sure. Can't quite remember what that was going on, but it was a heck of a time. And then the history of the place and the being able to be there with the boys, man, it's just special. And to see how the impact of the show stays with folks if it doesn't grow, because I honest to God think it just keeps growing.
Yeah, you're right. And the Bois Jacques Woods was quite an experience, wasn't it?
Oh, we talked about it. We couldn't stop talking about it. I still am talking about it with folks. It's been a month. And every time I do it, it's really hard because words fall short. Mm. And I think Nick Aaron was on stage and he said it was quiet. That was a really simple, beautiful, poetic way to rationalize some of the emotion, because there's just so much emotion. I think for us, I was thinking about it the other day, actually, that it's there is all this duty from us, and we checked each other and we kind of felt it constantly during the shooting of it to get it right. And what's interesting is it feels like that duty's just about done now.
Yeah.
And so inside of letting go of some of that duty, just as people, we get closer to each other, because we realize that's all we ever had was each other. So this trip really was a chance to kind of reconnect and feel like it's not so much carrying the mantle of this thing anymore. We can lay that down. It stands on its own. It is what it is. And then we can kind of just be together and make each other laugh and bust each other's balls and have a blast. And there's more laughter, and so that's a weird contradiction, right? Because it's this really intense place. You were there, and it has a feeling to it, and it's really hard to put words to that feeling, and especially if you've lived through or are a historian and understand all of the stories and all of the things that took place there. It's such an intense place. Mm-hmm. And yet there's also this camaraderie and friendship that was built out of that experience, that when you're with those men, when you're with, you know, your guys, you're still gonna have each other, and you're still gonna find that laugh, you know.
Sure.
It's a really interesting thing, man. It's really interesting.
And to be in the woods, for instance, with Scotty Gordon at his dad's foxhole, you know, it was just really special. I mean, how did those woods compare to the set, the Band of Brothers set? Did they get it right?
That's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing that gave me pause for I couldn't get over that for a while, because I spent a lot of time on that set. And that was like a second home, that set. It was really eerie to walk into those woods and just feel like I was back on that stage, because it was identical. really, really remarkable feeling that to not be able to tell the difference between the two.
Yeah,
there's sky above you, and the guys who set design all that are geniuses, and I didn't even understand how deep their genius ran until you actually walk through those woods and hear the way the branches and pine needles crackle under your feet. I mean, they got everything. It was everything. The only thing we didn't have when we were there, because it didn't snow, was the snow, but you could imagine it. You know?
Yeah, that's one of the things that Jimmy Madio said. He said it was just the only difference was the snow, and he said it was a slight echo when the explosions went off, and because you did it all in the big hangar, didn't you? You did it all.
Yeah, it was a hangar. It was a hangar. And still, I got lost. I don't know. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you pull that one off. I was the only dude who could get lost on that set.
Now, Tim Gray wants to know what made the castle at Rowley so special.
We made the castle where we stayed so special? Oh my gosh, man. It was from 1100. Well, it's insane. No, what made it special was Jimmy Madio blowing that horn. Did you see that video?
No, I didn't. Yeah. No. What is this?
Oh, geez, I can't even get into it. it was... You know, we don't have that here. You know that. I have an old farmhouse that I live in, super old. It was really kind of more of a shack that people part-time would pick fruit in the area in Northern California. And that was built in 1880. And people go, oh, whoa, that's one of the oldest structures in the area, you know, 1880. Those guys would laugh. You're standing in a place where, before that family took over the castle that was so kind to us and let us stay there, the family that owned it before them had it for 400 years, I think.
That's incredible.
I think that's right. I think that on the tour he said that. I mean, there's a church in the castle where they christened people. I mean, it's insane. I tried to sit my kids down and show them pictures, and I said, you guys would have loved it. And they were in awe, you know, because of the coat of arms and the armor and the, oh man, they were just, you know, it's like, you know, they were living in Hogwarts or something. It blew their mind.
Yeah.
But it blew my mind, man. It was amazing. And then, to have everybody there and for everybody to be, it was such a quick trip, but it felt like we were so, we just jumped right in, you know. It was a really good trip. It was a really good trip.
Now, do you think it's important that future generations should know what these men did in World War II?
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about that during the interview, too. I mean, how important is it that we understand what's going on with our history? We understand our history so that when we make decisions now, we can point back to that history and use it as a guide. Absolutely. I think the whole point of the World War II Foundation and it's the right point is to keep that alive, because we lose it. And I could say, as an American, we lose it quick. When we were shooting Band of Brothers, England made such a bigger deal out of the 4th of July than we would. I mean, you're taught, you taught American history, but it's sort of like, yeah, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't connect in this way, where you can go, you know, the English really understood what that meant for us. Mm. And you know, we don't go like, goddamn English, keeping us now. We just eat hot dogs on 4th of July and blow up fireworks. That was a huge moment in history. And when we were there for the 4th of July, it was a much bigger deal as a reflection of the history, not just the event, not just going, well, there's going to be a parade and there's going to be a thing, but an actual discussion of the history, which is, you know. So in that way, I think it's vitally important that kids understand not only the sacrifices and the heroism and the atrocities and all of it, but that you know, decisions were made, people stepped up, things had to be done, and sometimes we're put in a place that we have to make those decisions. And these kids really did something remarkable. I mean, they were boys. They were boys. And what they did was remarkable. And it should always be remembered. And I'm really proud, actually, a part of that. And I'm really proud that Tim's found a way to do that. I think the way to do it is to show as much of these men as you possibly can. And you know, documentary is a great way to do it. And yeah, documenting them and their stories you know, it's just it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you. It's important that we don't take our freedom for granted, and that the next generation realise this and pass it on to the future generations. Now, some of your Band of Brothers buddies appear in this new movie of yours. Jimmy yep. Madio's in it, Richard Speight yep. Jr.'s in it, Frank John Hughes yep. is in it. I want you to, first of all, today is Friday the 13th, which is quite creepy because it's a prominent date in the week, isn't it?
Yeah, you and I had a quick email back and forth about that, and it re-jogged in my memory how important that date is. And then I sent a text to John Mann and John Gunn, who were the co-writers and co-director sure. of the film, and brilliant guys, and you know, their work's stellar in this movie. But I texted him and I said, you know, Ross just reminded me that it's January 13th is the date, and that's so weird, right? It's such a coincidence. There you go.
And it's meant to happen.
And then John Mann reminded me it's also his birthday.
Oh wow!
Which and I said, did we do that on purpose? Man, we're sick. We're sick puppies. So, but yeah, so it has a lot of connections, man. It's really interesting that a film that pivots on coincidence, and the question of coincidence, right? You know, the reason that whole thing's in there is because I listened to a story about how when the Chinese tell stories, it's not really a story. It's not considered a story until there's a coincidence. A coincidence actually pushes the story forward. It's sort of an homage to the interconnectedness of life, and that coincidence for them is a little bit different of a concept, but it would be the closest to us. That's how we would know it, as coincidence.
Yeah.
And so when I had heard this story about how they approach storytelling, I was like, oh man, I really want that in our movie. And because of the way we shot it, we were allowed to do that, which is one of the cool things about the film, because we shot it over 10 months. We had a general structure of what we knew. We knew it was going to be this week. We knew it was going to be the days of this week. We're going to sort of reshape this guy. But we didn't know exactly what was going to be on each day. We didn't know if we wanted to stop midweek. We didn't really know where we were going. We didn't want to know, because we kind of wanted to be in that same space he was in.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we started to shoot footage, we'd cut footage and we'd go, oh, wow, that's really good and that's really horrible. And let's throw that out and let's go this way and let's try this. And so the story was shaped that way. So halfway through it, had already been shooting for 5.5 months. That whole coincidence thing wasn't even in there yet. So it's an interesting way to kind of make a movie.
Now, everybody should see this movie. It's really funny, and at times it's pretty moving. You play Dick Romans, a washed-up TV host whose marriage splits up the day before his 10th wedding anniversary. What else can you tell us about the plot?
She leaves, wants a divorce, and Dick, in a sort of half-baked act of rebellion, decides to do the 7-day celebration. A bunch of people were going to come up to the house and celebrate their 10-year wedding anniversary.
Right.
And so they had a whole bunch of things planned, and they were going to go do these, you know, like little events for the whole week with all their dearest friends. And so in an act of rebellion, Dick decides, you know, I'm going to go do it by myself. And does. And so the journey of what that week would have been celebrating this love that's gone turns him into, it's not really that it turns him into anything. It points him in a new direction. I think that's kind of where the movie lands. And so, I'm really glad you enjoyed it. And so many great characters in it.
So many brilliant characters.
I got, you mentioned the boys. We haven't really talked about them, but I mean, the three guys that you mentioned, Jim, I've worked with, you know, a ton, and it's really family. All three of those guys are family. That goes without saying. And then, you know, there's more than just those three. Those are the guys who were available to come and play at the time. but Jim makes me laugh in a way that's just beyond, I can't even, you know, he just, who he is just naturally compelling and funny and heartfelt and human. And you're just, he's such a great actor. So to be able to grab him and put him in the movie and then get all these laughs. When we first did the test screenings, Jim literally saved us from wanting to jump out of a window, because we'd get these huge laughs from Jim. You know, when he would come on screen, people would just lose their shit, and we'd be like, okay, good, we got Jim. And then Frank plays a smaller role, but very pivotal. Frank's just like, you know, he's beyond. You can't, man. Frank John Hughes.
Yeah,
so we don't have to talk about that. He's just fantastic. Top, you know, no matter what he does. And then Richie's hysterical. I mean, I think it's kind of a different role for Rich.
Richard was brilliant in this.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. and you don't get to see him like that all the time. And again, Richie, I mean, we work together so much. These guys, we all do. When somebody's working on a project, you know, Richie was an associate producer on Leave. He helped us raise money, and so did Jim. And, right. and obviously I wrote that with Frank, and we both started it together. I mean, so we have our own little troupe, our own little group of guys that love to work, whether it's Jimmy doing Apple Box or Richard doing America 101, or, you know, we're constantly grabbing each other to do stuff, because we speak in a shorthand from the history of what we've been through together. We love what each other does, and it's fun as hell to be on set together.
Yeah,
you could tell, right, watching the movie. Don't you feel like when I'm having a conversation with Jim, it just feels like that those two guys have known each other for 20 years?
Exactly, and yeah. That's the thing, is as a bystander seeing you guys together, and you know, you can see the connection, and of course. In Band of Brothers, you guys were close in Band of Brothers as well. The Perconte and Liz were close. So you were,
yeah.
And then to see you guys in real life acting the same way, it's just it really comes across on screen. But also there's a few other great cast members in this movie. MC Gainey as the Doctor is one of my favorites.
How great!
When he's leaning on your leg,
MC's one of my favorites of all time. I worked with him on a movie called Love Ranch with Taylor Hackford directed, and Helen Mirren and Joe Pesci were in. We did that movie together, and I held on for dear life. And then he wound up being on Justified, and we put him in Leave. He's in Leave, and along with Bryan Cranston, and so we've been super lucky that people want to come and play when we're going to do stuff. And MC Gainey's fantastic. Reno Wilson, who's on Mike and Molly, I've known for 20 years. He's one of my favorite actors.
The Cosby Show.
Yeah, he was in the Cosby Show. Yeah. He's been around forever. And brilliant, brilliant, like, lights up the universe. Joelle Carter, who's in Justified. She's Lenny. She plays the sort of love interest.
I love when she smells your breath. When she,
oh my God, isn't that great?
before she gets you to babysit.
That was her idea.
Oh, that was brilliant. Her.
I think John and her had talked about that, and they didn't want to spoil it for me.
It was so very subtle.
I didn't even know it was coming, and she did it, and I sort of went, yeah, okay, it's perfect.
Now, your brother Josh is in the movie as well. He also had
he also had a
part to play with him, some of the music as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did all the music that's in Los Angeles, all the stuff that all the electronic music in Los Angeles. My brother's a really, really unbelievable composer and writer of music. He's a great musician, and he's constantly handing me stuff, you know, that I write to, and I just love. She's a huge fan of his work as a musician. Forget about it as an actor. I mean, we talked about all these different relationships, but obviously the one with my brother is the longest. And we've been goofing around together for our whole lives. He's, I think, some of the strangest comedy, and some of really the comedy that really goes for the jugular in the movie is with me and Josh, because you settle into this incredible. We wanted it to feel like Dick had run away from Los Angeles and moved up to a kinder, more gentler place, whether that is actually true in the end or not, but that he was trying to find refuge somewhere. And then when he was forced back to Los Angeles, we wanted him to look at it through a different lens, so that it was a bit more, it was a little bit off kilter, it was a little stranger. So the music would shift, the way we shot it shifted a bit, the color palette shifted, and it felt at times just a little different than the stuff that shot up in Northern California, just a little skewed. And I think Josh just plays that so perfectly, man. That whole story about the painting, it's just so great the way he's brilliant in it.
Now, another
I got a good cast, Ross. I got a good cast.
You've
man.
Got a fantastic I mean, cast, and there's
if
one.
If it wasn't for that cast, you know what I mean? Because me, not so much, man.
No, Austin, you were great, and I don't know how you remembered all that dialogue for an actor, because you're so much of the movie. I know you said it took 10 months to make it.
Shut up.
Come
I never
on!
Shut up in the movie. I
don't know how you guys do it. I mean, because you really carry that film from beginning to end, and that's the one thing I kept thinking was, how does he remember? I mean, I know it's 10 months, but even that, there's just so much dialogue, unbelievable. One character who didn't have any dialogue but was outstanding in this movie was the dog.
I know.
I mean,
I know.
How did you? They say never work with animals, but you guys just seem to hit it off. Is that your own dog, or what's
that
the story there?
That is my dog. That is my dog. She's a rescue. She's a rescue. She and I have a really special relationship, and I think that's the only way. Here's the thing with the dog. Again, 10 months. So we didn't know that the dog was going to be in the movie, and this is a great story about filmmaking in general. You never really understand what people are going to experience. You have an idea with a rough cut. The first rough cut of the movie. The movie is 97 minutes now. I think it runs pretty well. I think it's the right length and it moves in the way that it's supposed to move. But when we first cut it, it was 2 hours and 40 minutes long. So if you can imagine slogging through that, but you had to figure out the where the jokes were and what was going on. And, mm-hmm. and so through the screening process, the dog disappeared when I went to L.A. So, because we just weren't thinking about it. We're like, you know, he gave it to a friend. As filmmakers, we're like, it doesn't matter. It's the dog. And so after the first screening, every note we got is, where did the dog go? and literally, like master writers in Hollywood were kind enough to give us their time. And they said, your ally through the whole movie, the only friend you really have is that dog.
Yeah.
And then she's not there when you go to L.A., And we're like, what happened to the ally for the most important part of the movie? So we're like, okay, the dog's got to go back in. So we had to go and shoot the dog in the car going down to Los Angeles and bring her along and put her back in the movie, which we did. And then everybody was fine with it. But we didn't understand that. We didn't understand how important she was. And right. So then we started to realize, okay, wait, maybe she has a beat or two more in this place or this place. And we did that. We added her just in little small pockets here and there. And landed where we landed, and I think she really does give you right from the very beginning when she licks me on the couch when I'm sleeping on the couch, you realize
exactly.
Well, somebody loves this guy.
Yeah,
somebody loves, even if it's a dog. You know, there's a creature on the planet that loves this guy. So he must be okay. So we'll give him a chance at least.
I figured it had to be your dog, or it was just you had the best trainer in the world, because the dog just seemed to comply with everything from licking your face to sticking its balls in your face to whatever you wanted. The dog did
everything. Everything. The dog just did
fantastic.
Whatever I asked her to do. Yeah, she's completely. If she could lay in that bed, she'll do anything. If she could just be by me, she's fine. She was really great. And then she'd sit in the car and just look at me like, "What are we doing?" Which was great for the movie, because that's what she should be looking at me doing. She's pretty special. She was a rescue, man. She wasn't going to make it. She kissed my son underneath her gate at a pound in Burbank, California, and then wound up becoming a movie star, kind of overnight.
Amazing. That's brilliant. Oh, I don't have it in front of me. The guy you play tennis with.
Yes, Kobe Tolan.
Yeah. I mean, what a character he is as well.
Kobe's fantastic. You know, and Kobe and I just finished a little web series that's on Funny or Die right
now. That's the one, yeah.
I Gotta Go, which is so bizarre and such a weird little thing, but we had a blast shooting that. And folks should check that out too, because that you can get anywhere, I think, right? Funny or Die is that around
yeah,
the world?
Yeah. I was watching it the other night here in Scotland, and I was going to bring that up actually. Funny or Die, just type it. What's the name of the actual series?
The web series is called I Gotta Go.
I Gotta Go. So if people type that in, it'll come up, and they can also get it on.
Yeah, it'll come up right off of Funny or Die, yeah.
Yeah.
And Kobe plays this tennis instructor. He's just a really funny human being and a really smart dude. And he did stand up, and John and John saw some of the stand up, and we're like, we got to use this guy. He's amazing. And then he's so game for all of it. It was like, you know, he wore the tiny little shorts and the headband and the whole thing. he's a funny character. That was our little wink to Wes Anderson. He was sort of our Wes Anderson wink. He just seems like he's in a fairy book, something a fairy tale book somewhere.
Now, did you do a lot of improvisation when you were working in this movie? Because it's...
Yeah, more with some people, more less with others. You know, it was kind of just like what worked with Josh. We shot some stuff, early stuff with Josh, just to get a rhythm with stuff, and we were not quite sure about which way we were going to go with things. It was more of like a test run.
Yeah.
And the hot tub scene, where I say, I just wish I had a mug that said, world's greatest husband, that whole thing, that was an improv that lasted about 5 hours long. That's the only stuff that made it to the movie, so that told you how good that improv was. And then we quickly realized that's probably, like, when you write a scene and go, okay, so the boys sit in the hot tub and talk about life and love. That's probably not enough of a backdrop groundwork to work from. So we then started to write much more, even if it was just jokes, even if it was just like, we want to get to these points. And then for like Joelle, when Joelle showed up, we only had Jill for 4 days, and she shot 40 pages.
Wow.
So that's, you know, that's kind of amazing, because she was brilliant, man. And again, the smelling and the breath and the little things, like with the cookie, and, you know, your kids the cookies, and you know,
cookie,
not all of that. We didn't know exactly where we were going with all that stuff. So some of that has some improv flair to it, you know, inside of the structure of where we were going.
That was one of the laugh out loud moments for me, was when you said the kid had made the cookies. They said it tastes like urine. How do you do that? How do you do that to a cookie? That was one of those.
Yeah, how can you even get that taste in the cookie? I don't understand.
There's so many moments like that in the movie, though. That so many laugh out loud moments, and it takes a lot for me personally to laugh out loud at a movie, and this movie does it for me. But there's also a great soundtrack on it.
How did you
find the band Trouble in the Wind?
Oh my gosh, man. We lucked out. There's a woman, Lauren, who was helping out, associate producer on the movie, and her brother is the lead singer of Trouble in the Wind.
Really?
And yeah, and she said, look, and we were kind of looking around, we were going like, we just don't know what it's going to be. And do you know a singer by the name of, tallest man on earth, is that it? I think he goes by Tallest Man on Earth.
Is that a Swedish singer?
Humor.
The Swedish singer, is it Swedish, Christian Mattsson his name is? It goes under the name The Tallest Man on Earth.
Yeah, that's it.
He's Swedish.
Yeah, so I was listening to a bunch of that stuff when we were shooting and writing and stuff, and going through the process, and so we were open to that sort of sound, and then we heard Trouble in the Wind, and you talk about, we're having this conversation on January 13th, that's kind of a coincidence, and it's kind of a cool coincidence. Trouble in the Wind shaped the movie. We were lucky enough to get some of their songs before we were done. So we had already started to put the band into some of the scenes. They were helping us walk down the road.
Yeah.
So their stuff, and they had this huge library of stuff. Their catalogs, and I trust me with this. I will not lead you wrong. Go to iTunes. They're on iTunes. They are around. They have a new album dropping on February. Their last album is fantastic. They are really, really good.
Oh, they're fantastic. The music really complements the movie as well. It's fantastic.
Doesn't it though? It feels like there's this weird, there's a really interesting, compliment is the perfect way of saying it. It's a collaboration between what's happening on screen and the story that's being told and their music. It just works perfectly together.
And at the top of the show, we played one of their songs. We played the first song we played was Rising, and I'm also going to be playing another one just shortly called Safe, which is another great track.
Fantastic.
Now, but I want to, you know, your lovely wife Jenny is also on the movie. She didn't just do the catering; she was a producer as well, wasn't she?
Yeah.
I think it's great that you get everybody involved, and I think that you'll
kind of have to.
You say that like with a sigh. You kind of have to.
Yeah. Well, you do. I mean, these are such little labors of love. You know, we're so lucky to just have. Just have gone and done the festival circuit that we did. We won some really cool festivals, and we got invited to a bunch of cool festivals, and the movie gets to be seen by people who are in your, your peers, and you collaborate inside of that experience together, and you go see their movies, and they see your movies, and it's just the life of a filmmaker. But to get these made, you're spending tiny amounts of money. In fact, this is kind of an interesting story, but. We had John and I, along with Graham Yost, who is one of the executive producers and writers for Band of Brothers, Earth to the Moon, Speed,
right.
Justified, and has been super kind to me over the years and plugging me into projects that he's working on. We came to him with this totally separate idea. And he was kind of like, yeah, that's a good idea. I don't know if it's right for me. I said, look, sit on it, think about it. And in the meantime, watch The Week, because that's what we do. And you can see what we. And he decided to partner up with us because of the movie, because he just couldn't believe that we had made it for as little money as we made it, and that we did it the way we did it.
Yeah.
And in order for you to do that, it's like everybody's got to be in it. It's a whole family thing. I always say like, it's sort of a weird, interesting combination of. Cassavetes and Louis C.K. You know, it's small, it's kind of has a singular voice, but it's all family and it's wives and kids. My son's in it, for crying out loud. That's my oldest son, the redhead.
You're joking!
No.
Oh, I didn't know that. He does so well in the movie as well.
Yeah. That's Henry Gomez.
Wow, I had no idea. I mean,
he looks just like Jenny. That's why.
Of course. Now that you say that, it looks like Jenny. But you mentioned very briefly about the Film Festival Awards. Some of the awards you got, this thing has got is amazing. Best cast, best director, best actor, best feature at the Hamilton Festival, best feature at the Cayman Islands Festival. It's an incredible amount of awards, deservedly so. I mean, I urge everyone to see this movie. Where can people see it? Because they can watch it online, they can buy it online, they can get it on DVD.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, so what's the best place for them to go and see it?
DVD is Amazon right now, although it's on Best Buy and Target, but Amazon seems to be the quickest way to get to it. It's also on a service called FlixFling, which you just sign up your email address and do your thing, and then you can buy or rent from them directly. They're sort of like their own little iTunes. They're working with Amazon.
Right.
And so they're sort of a sister company.
Right. Then, yeah, it's kind of a Netflixy type thing, isn't it?
It is kind of a Netflix thing. Yeah. And then I believe Amazon Prime at the end of the month, and then I was hoping to be able to announce something for Europe, but we're just so close to finding out. So I will tell you. I will update you if that deal gets done in the next week or so, and then you can. We can tweet all this out, or
yeah, absolutely,
to let people know.
But we get Amazon Prime in the UK. So hopefully if it goes on Amazon Prime, we can get
that'd
it on there.
That'd be great.
For those who don't know, it's a format, it's a bit similar to Netflix. It's like Amazon's version of Netflix, where you just you can watch it online. And so yeah, but do keep us updated, because you've joined the Twitterverse after all these years.
Oh my gosh.
Gomez was taken.
What took me so long?
What did take you so long?
I know.
You seem to be around on Instagram, but now you're on Twitter, and people need to start following you at Gomez was taken. And Josh has been on there for a while, hasn't he, your brother?
Yeah. Josh has been on there for a while. Someone said to me, Ross. They said, "Hey, welcome to Twitter finally." And I tweeted them back or whatever. I feel like I'm the last guy to buy a pair of parachute pants. I was the last one on the rack.
No, listen, there's loads of people still not on Twitter, and they don't know what they're missing. It's a great tool. It's a great thing.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy, man. It's crazy how, you know, I can see how people could get riled up about things, and I get that. There's a lot of that energy out there, but for me, it's just been, at least right now, I get to see what everybody's doing that I love, who I love. I'm like, oh, whoa, they got a thing, and he's doing a play, and Robin Lang's talking about a show, and Ross Owen's going to be interviewing blah, blah, blah.
It's
fantastic, man. Support it and be involved and pass the word. And when you're making a small movie like I just made, it's a really important tool, because how am I going to tell people? I don't have a big, huge marketing budget to go to rely on to get it out to folks. So the only way to do it is to try to just get it out there through social media and hopefully word of mouth and people having kind things to say. The movie makes some folks laugh and so hopefully it'll gain some traction and people will see it. The most important thing for me is, and I mean this sincerely. It's going to sound like I'm full of shit, but I'm really not. I would show up to folks their house with a Region 1 DVD player and a converter. I'd fly to Europe and play the movie one-on-one for each person that wanted to see it, because I believe in the movie, and I think the movie says some interesting things, and I think it's a cool, it's a good movie. It's an interesting film.
It's brilliant. And it's a great movie.
I'm just super proud of it, and after you spend years on a project like this, and it's finally out there in the world, it's sort of like watching your kid go to kindergarten. You kind of just go get him. I hope it goes well. Don't pee your pants.
No, listen, that's a great thing about, we just mentioned Twitter. The great thing about, you know, this movie, you can get it out there on Twitter. You tell one person, and they tell their 100 followers on Twitter, and then their followers tell their followers, and it has this great knock-on effect, and it's a wonderful, it's a really, really brilliant way to market a movie, especially when you've got all your brothers on there, your band of brothers, guys, you've got all us, you've got all the fans of the show. We'll get that knowledge out there, and we'll get that movie out there, and I can't, I'm not just saying this because I like you, Rick, I'm saying it because it genuinely is a brilliant movie. I really, really loved watching it, and I think people need to. It really is so funny, and people need to, and it's touching as well. I mean, you know, I didn't expect that to come. You know, it gives you a lump in the throat. I can't express enough how, you know, people should, if you get the chance to see this movie online, go and buy it and watch it, because it really is worth it, and you can see the work that you've put into it. It's truly been a big labour of love, and it means a lot to you. Now, what's in the future for you, Rick? What's next after this?
We're gonna keep doing the same thing, man. My whole thing is just keep telling stories, and you know, I'm at some point gonna collaborate again with Frank John Hughes. We've been talking about it for a while now. He's super busy being a giant Hollywood writer. Frank's super busy doing all that, but we're talking again about what it is we might, how, you know, what it might be. John and John, we have a company called Go Art, and that company is constantly trying to sell scripts and make stuff, and we've been really fortunate and had a bunch of luck. So we have stuff in development right now that'll go in the pipeline. I wrote a script about a grape heist that happens up in Northern California, where two winemakers lose 80 acres of Pinot grapes, and so they decide to steal from their neighbors. That's called hot fruit. So it's a heist thing, but with fruit. And really funny and really weird. So we're out there making our stuff and doing our thing, and Jenny's really involved with the Alexander Film Commission. Ross, I gotta have you up here, man. I'm gonna take you around San Francisco for a day. Then we'll come up here and we'll have a splash of wine and we'll eat some food, and you'll see why.
Sing songs and do magic tricks.
Sounds good to me. That's what we got to do, man. We got to go on tour. We sing a couple of songs. I'll be your magic assistant. It'll be great.
Fantastic. Oh, that's going to be great. I'll tell you what, I'm going to hold you to that next time I'm over in the States.
Please hold me to it. I would love it. I would love to host you up here, man. You get to see all the beauty, and there's such great art up here. There's such great people. It's a really cool place. And we've been working with them. I mean, we're making film up in this area of California that's outside of Hollywood, and it's got a rich tradition. I mean, you know, Coppola is up here, there are important filmmakers, up here, and writers up here.
It's a place to be.
So, you know, that community is kind of coming together. And then when you say to your boys, you know, hey, come on up, let's go shoot something. Everybody's like, yep, I'll be there. So it's been pretty, we've been pretty happy with the way all that's going.
Tell me something, well. How's the weather there, right? There's a reason for me asking, how's the weather there today?
Today, it's rainy today.
Ah, okay. Yeah, outside it's really, really pouring with rain right now, and I was wondering, you know what it's like in the movie, you play, you know, you've got the microphone and the headphones on, you pick up every little noise, and I can, it's the most incredible rain going on outside right now, and I wasn't sure if it was me or you.
Oh no, we don't have it. We have it's drizzling for me, so I it's really hard for me to hear the rain right now. Yeah. I see it kind of splashing around, but it's been we went through some really two or three days of really really bad rain, really intense rain, and now we're kind of just down to a drizzle. I hope it dries out a little bit. I think we're getting more. We could use it because, you know, California's been in a bit of a drought. But
well, I'll certainly bring some with me.
I was watching The Crown. My wife and I binge-watched The Crown because, you know, everybody was like, yeah, watch The Crown, yeah, watch The Crown. So I watched The Crown, and it's fantastic. But they've got some Scotland stuff in there. Are they in Scotland when they're shooting that, right?
The Crown? I haven't seen it.
Yeah. You got to see it. But they go out to Scotland, and I'm like, this Scotland, that's the one place that I haven't been.
Oh, you must come to Scotland, and you know, Robin's here as well, and Robin's such a lovely, lovely, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life, and I'm so grateful to have Robin Lang as a friend, and you come to Scotland, and we'll take you around and show you the place, and bring a camera crew with you, because you want to do some filming here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a great idea. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll bring a camera, and we'll do just a little bit of. We'll do something really strange in Scotland.
Yeah,
really cool.
Oh, yeah, you definitely should. You won't regret it. And, and I'm so excited because I'll come over. And I'm just dying to get to meet that dog of yours.
Oh, she wouldn't leave you alone, man. She wanted to climb into your luggage and go home with you. She's a peach. You'd love her, and I mean it, man. That's an open invitation. I would absolutely love to host you. So hopefully that'll get that going.
Sweet. And it was Nick Aaron's birthday actually on Sunday.
Sing him a happy birthday.
I think you should.
What do you think? All right.
Okay.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dearest Nick Aaron, who's also known as Popeye. Happy birthday to you.
That was really kind of, there's something really kind of sexy about it.
I think Nick will appreciate the fact that you just sang happy birthday like Marilyn Monroe to him. And
I totally did. It was, and it was like a weird, you know, male Marilyn Monroe. It was like the weird. I can't remember. It was like a hybrid. It was a strange.
A Butch Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly, Butch Monroe. That's the character. It's Butch Monroe.
Butch Monroe. That's your new movie.
Butch Monroe.
Rick, listen, I want to thank you for being my very first guest of 2017. We wish you all the very best with this movie, The Week. People out there listening, go and see it. Whatever you have to do, watch it online, buy it on DVD. You've got to see it. We're going to play another song from the soundtrack. Wait till you hear this. It's another track from Trouble in the Wind, and this one's called Safe.
I love this song. I love this song. So I'm glad you picked Safe. Safe is one of my favorites.
And come back and see us again soon.
Thank you so much, Ross. Man, you are the man.
Oh, listen, man, I'm going to watch the film The Week over and over again just to watch you on a microphone, because I need all the tips I can get. You know, so I'm going to be the new...
So not true, man. So not true.
I'm going to be...
You're a genius.
I'm going to be the new Dick.
I really can't thank you enough. Thanks so much, man.
Okay, you take care, Rick. I'll speak to you
all
soon.
Right. We'll talk soon.
Cheers,
right.
Man. Bye-bye.
Bye now.